This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. While free trade might sound like an American concept, we are, in fact, relative newbies to this economic phenomenon. Free trade was born more than 170 years ago in the northern English city of Manchester, where the movement to get rid of import tariffs and other trade barriers began, originally with outrage over something called the Corn Laws. It sounds ancient, arcane even, but its repercussions around the world continue to this day, and it is the next story in our series, Trade-Off, Who Wins and Who Loses in Global Trade. Marketplace's Stephen Beard has it from the busy streets of Manchester.
On this busy street in the city centre stands Manchester's most beautiful building in glorious sandstone with Italianate arcades and richly decorated with carved figures. It's not quite what you'd expect to find in the world's first industrial city, a place once infamous for its smoke-belching chimneys. The building celebrates the birth here of a big idea and, says tour guide Elizabeth Sibbering, proclaims it with a bold inscription across the facade.
In big gold letters on the top, it says Free Trade Hall, and we think that's probably the only building in the whole world that's named after free trade. Usually it's named after monarchs or places or something like that. Manchester, Radical Manchester, Free Trade, so it's written on our city.
The hall, which today is a five-star hotel, was built in the mid-19th century to commemorate a victory. Victory for the Manchester men. They were the emerging class of merchants and manufacturers, and it was their fight in the 1840s against the British aristocracy that launched the movement against tariffs and trade barriers. Today, this vast Victorian cotton mill at Quarry Bank, south of the city, is a tourist attraction. Tens of thousands of visitors come here and are bemused by the clattering, wheezing Rube Goldberg machinery. But in the 1840s, says Mike Sanders of Manchester University, people marvelled at this scene. This was the future.
There is something awe-inspiring. There is something truly remarkable and amazing about the machinery, the precision, the way in which it produces cloth in quantities that previously could not have been dreamt of.
And produced undreamt of wealth. The new textile tycoons resented the old money and the power of the landed aristocracy, and they resented the steep tariffs that those aristocrats had fought to get. They'd made grain more expensive to bolster the profits of the crops grown on their land. Those Corn Laws, as these tariffs were called, also pushed up the price of bread, with devastating consequences for the poor.
We ask our daily bread.
This protest song from the 1840s says it all, lamenting the widespread starvation and angrily blaming the aristocracy.
Answer ye lordlings gay, ye useless idle few.
But why should the kings of cotton, who were hardly enlightened employers, be concerned about the high price of grain?
The merchants here didn't like that because it meant that they had to keep wages high as well to keep their workers going, in a way.
The cotton mill owners had a keen commercial interest in wanting to scrap the Corn Laws, says Elizabeth Sibbling.
They could see what problems it was causing for their workers. They couldn't afford to eat.
Workers and bosses, bankers and lawyers, politicians, churchmen and social reformers joined the crusade against the Corn Laws. It was a fight for cheaper food, a battle against the aristocracy, and for the textile tycoons in particular, a drive towards free trade. They wanted other countries to scrap their tariffs and throw open their markets to British goods. Like all good crusaders, says Mike Sanders, they convinced themselves that God was on their side.
It was the belief that the good Lord had made the world in such a way that the nations were supposed to trade, and anything that impeded free trade was harmful to the human race as a whole, and in their view, it was manifest in the form of people who were going hungry in one of the richest countries in the world.
The crusade crushed the aristocratic opposition. The Corn Laws were repealed in 1846. Foreign grain poured into Britain. Much of it came eventually from the former colony that supplied the Manchester mills with most of their raw cotton. Will Ashworth is author of a new book about the Industrial Revolution.
With the rapid influx of prairie grain from the USA, that impacted upon the social structure of Britain. You saw the demise of the landowner and the rise of the middling ranks and the owners of production due to the cheap imports now coming from the prairie lands of the United States of America to Britain.
The American Revolution, about 100 years after it had happened, finally humbled the British aristocracy, much to the satisfaction of the British manufacturing and commercial classes. But the repeal of the Corn Laws did not persuade the rest of the world to immediately follow suit, much to the chagrin of free traders.
My name is Adrian Wooldridge. I'm the political editor of The Economist. The Economist was founded in 1843 to pursue the case against the Corn Laws.
Yes, The Economist is part of this story. It was created to be the voice of the anti-Corn Law crusade. The irony, says Wooldridge, is that the foreign country that profited most from the repeal of those laws did not embark on the same programme of tariff scrapping.
We think of America as being the sort of the great capitalist power. But in fact, America was a country that was opposed to free trade right the way through the 19th century and all the way up to 1945. Britain was the first country to embrace it and to say the best way to create universal prosperity is to have freedom of commerce and trade. And Britain led that in a world where that was disapproved of by almost everybody.
Britain may not have been high-minded in opposing the Corn Laws. The main aim may have been to exploit its industrial power, to flood other countries with its manufactured goods while they focus their energies on agriculture. If that was the plan, it has, in the long term, spectacularly backfired. Britain today has a large trade deficit. Its manufacturing is a pale shadow of its former self. Oh, and more than half of its food, including grain, comes from abroad. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.